Yeah, we're already about halfway through the retreat, and we've been putting conditions in place to allow metta to arise. So it's probably become apparent that you can't make the heart open, and you can't make metta arise, and similarly you can't make insight or insights happen, but you can put the conditions in place that may allow those things to come about. In the same way that we can't make the wild geese come to the lake. Yeah. But if the ground is saturated and if it has a gentle hollow to it that receives the rain, and if the rains fall and the lake extends, then maybe the geese will come. So the conditions that support metta and insight are many and complex, and only some of them are within our control. So we do what we can. And I just want to mention at this point silence as a supportive condition here. So silence isn't an on-off thing. It's not like now we're in silence or now we're not in silence. Silence is something that can deepen. And we can take it on as a practice, but in a way it arises quite spontaneously out of contentment, which arises out of non-clinging, non-grasping. So you might want to notice if you can deepen your silence. So it might be... you know, I'm talking about an inner silence and how that gets expressed. So it might be that we do things, keep ourselves busy with reading or knitting or whatever, writing, as a distraction. Or it might be that we're doing those things as nourishment. Yeah? Only you can really discern the difference between those two, but... if it's as a distraction and avoiding of experience, you might want to just see if you can just stay with your experience a little bit more fully or a little bit longer. Sometimes for myself, I find if I'm kind of making myself busy and distracting myself, or just about to start reading something that I'm talking off retreat now, something really trashy that it's not gonna help. I just do nothing, just stop and do nothing for a bit, or I just lie down for a bit, and then I wait, and then I see what I want to do, and quite often it shifts. So doing nothing can be helpful. Okay, so I want to say a little something about dharmas as reference. So Jyoti was saying at the beginning of the retreat in the introduction that sometimes this is Dharma as reference, metta with Dharma as reference, with a capital D, and sometimes it can be Dharmas as reference. We've gone for the Dharmas as reference, but as you're probably aware, Dharma means quite a lot of things, doesn't it? It can mean the truth, it can mean the teaching of the Buddha, it can mean the sort of natural laws that describe the way things are. It can also mean phenomena. So we're taking it in this last sense of phenomena. So someone asked me early in the retreat, they said, what is a phenomena? I thought it was a great question. So of course I went to the dictionary. I like Greek. I don't know, understand Greek, but I do like Greek. So it comes from the Greek phenomenon, which means thing appearing to view. A thing appearing to view. And that in turn comes from phainen, not quite sure how you pronounce that, which means to show. So it's what is showing itself or revealing itself or wanting to be seen or revealed. You can sort of imagine it different ways. How the world, how experience is offering itself to you, maybe, even something like that. And we've been reciting each morning this every moment a myriad of phenomena unfold. So whatever it is we are, we have this tremendous sensitivity and we experience through all of our senses, including our mind sense. So we are, our lives are the experience of a myriad of phenomena unfolding continuously, yeah. All sorts of phenomena. So what we tend to do, because that might be a little bit disconcerting, is take bundles of phenomena and recognize them and identify them and put a label on them and say, oh, this is a so-and-so, this is a small wooden table. This is a book of poems. It can be very helpful to orientate yourself in the world, quite necessary. So there's nothing bad about that. If you ask me where Diyajyoti is, I can tell you. She's over there. How do I know she's over there? As I recognise a whole load of sense impressions, and I go, well, that's Diyajyoti, and I don't confuse her with anything else. I don't confuse her with Sangamani, so he looks quite different. But it doesn't mean that I know who or what Diyajyoti is. So just because I can say there's Diyajyoti doesn't tell you really what that means. And this tends to be our mistake. So we take that that label and then we apply it to something and it becomes fixed, coagulated, congealed. Becomes a thing, it becomes a noun, an object. So I was reading a bit of this, the Estonian poet Jan Kaplinski, and he was saying, nouns are like ice and snow. In them is death and eternity, which are almost the same. Cold, icy, marmoreal eternity. So it freezes things. Quite interesting, we've got such cold weather today. It freezes things or it flattens things. It flattens the world in some way. So it gives us certainties, but they're sort of false certainties. And you can't flatten the world into objects without at the same time flattening yourself. Inner and outer in that way are the same. So a little bit more of Kaplinski. Sometimes I dream of a language in which there are no nouns, only verbs. A thought that may occur more easily to someone who knows the Finno-Ugrian languages, in which even negation is a verb. Like a remainder of an earlier living, changing and flowing world that gradually congeals, freezes into nouns, fossils, ice, theories, principles, and to which you try more and more desperately and more resignedly to speak of its own youth, of light, which is a flowing and a surging, and of life, which is light. So he puts the matter rather beautifully. So as we have been cultivating metta, which is love without clinging, hopefully you're starting to notice that there's more space arising in your experience. There's a possibility for more flow. So the more that we open, or at least don't close, and allow, or at least don't refuse, and the more we stop fixing experience into me and you and lake and geese, then we get more of a sense of flow, more of a sense of arising and ceasing, and more mystery. So it's almost as if we begin with some cloth, and then we start to notice more closely the texture, and then the weave, and then all the individual threads and the spaces between them, and the whole thing starts to loosen. So we do move from density to lightness, translucency, fluidity, ephemerality. And this is true both for ourselves as the experiencer and for the experience, and those separations become less distinct. So you might get a sense of space and time opening out and yielding more. We might get a sense of our narrative self, which is the way we extend ourselves forwards and backwards through time, starts to dissolve. You might have a sense of occupying more and more this moment, experiencing the richness of this moment more deeply. So this is a natural movement that just happens as we cultivate metta awareness, as we become stiller. But we can also choose to pay attention to phenomena. So bring a little bit of intention in that. We can just choose to move our attention from the content of our experience to the qualities of our experience. So we might choose to move our awareness from the content of our experience to the quality of our experience. So perhaps by content I mean a bit more like for me, an achy hip. That might be the content, and the quality is the actual, well, what does that actually feel like? Or to move from a story about what I am to actually what is the sensations right now that are going on, that in a way are sort of underpinning that story, in a way which that story is arising out of. You can track the stories back to, often to qualities and tensions in the body. So it's just a subtle movement of attention. It's not a big thing. It's quite gentle. It's like a very slight turning of the gaze. It's like, and it's not really any different from choosing to look at the pussy willow on the shrine and then turning your attention to the spaces between the pussy willow branches on the shrine. Yeah, it's just that. So you just a subtle shift in attention, or going from looking to listening to the wind. Yeah, you can just make that move. It doesn't require effort. So, yeah, so this awareness of phenomena, it's not like, just sort of carrying on with that imagery, it's not like directing a spotlight onto a detailed onto detail and doing some sort of intense scrutiny of it, that probably would be quite painful and would probably give you a headache. So it's rather that we relax into experience with awareness, with non-clinging. And the awareness is inside the experience. Yeah. We're not applying awareness to something. We're allowing the awareness and the experience, they unfold together. So that the turning towards sort of happens within itself. That makes sense. Sometimes I just play with this idea of things almost self-illumining, like they have their own, maybe that's the best I can say. Yes, they sort of light themselves up of their own accord. And this bringing awareness to phenomena it's an embodied, so just again, it's not a head-based thing, it's an embodied thing. And for me, that's where the image of White Tara is very lovely. You know, she sees through the body, through and in the body. Yeah, she has eyes in her hands and feet, so she sees with a multiplicity of perspectives and in a completely embodied way. So all of this is turning our attention and just noticing phenomena as opposed to things or beings. And then what we're doing is bringing metta, kindness, towards that. So it's just quite interesting. Maybe we haven't tried doing that before. Bringing metta towards experience, whatever experience is arising, rather than towards the person. Yeah. It makes it something that where you can do it all the time, basically. It's in any place. So it's something you can experiment with. So what we'll do is we'll have a period of meditation, I think probably about 30 minutes, and then, well, it was going to be walking, but you're going to be quite hardy if you're going out today. So the walking option's open, but the alternative to walking is lying down in the shrine room. We'll see what you're made of. So we might have a walking or a lying down break, and then we'll have a short break, 15 minutes, and come back and do an open sit at 12:15. Okay. So we begin arriving into our bodies. Connecting pelvis to earth. Skull to sky. And this column of bone and fluid and muscle and electricity. Energy that is the spine rising up from pelvis to skull. Length of our body connected. And as we inhale, a gentle opening across the chest and of the heart. And as we exhale, a releasing in the belly, the face, and the jaw. Soles of the feet, sensitive. Palms of the hands, fingers, sensitive. Just having an attitude of welcoming or allowing. And begin with noticing what's in your experience right now. What is revealing itself? What sensation wants to be known or felt? What experience? Just welcoming that fully, just as it is. Allowing it to change as it will. To move or to fade. bathing the experience arising in love and kindness. Creating an open, tender space into which all experience can unfold. Just as it will. Without needing to be any different from what it is. And if you lose touch with what you're doing, come back to felt experience in the body. Can you welcome sound into your experience? Just as it is. If there's resistance or pain, can you welcome that too? Just as it is. Can you bring a quality of welcoming or allowing to the sense of self? Or even to the sense of metta, which is also a phenomenon. field of allowing or welcoming, where everything has its place. Thoughts, images, memories, all phenomena arising into love.